Chapter 27 To Surprise Queens and Kings. It was not quite so simple as just saying she would go, of course. "This is unwise, sister," Avienda said darkly, as Marilla scurried off to freshen herself. Scurried, in truth. The Grey seemed to be keeping a sharp eye out for sea folk before she reached the sitting-room doors. When a sister of Elaine's standing said go, Marilla went. Arms folded and shawl wrapped around her so she looked very much the wise one, Avienda stood over Elaine at her writing-table. "This is very unwise."
"Wise?" Brigida growled, feet apart and fists planted on her hips. "Wise? The girl wouldn't know wise if it bit her on the nose. Why this rush? Let Marilla do what Greys do, arrange a parley in a few days or a week. Queens hate being surprised, and kings despise it. Believe me, I know it to my cost. They find ways to make you regret it."
The warder bond mirrored her anger and frustration. "I want to catch them by surprise, Brigitte. It might help me to find out just how much they know about me." Grimacing, Elaine pushed away the blotted page and took another sheet from the inlaid rosewood paper box. Her weariness had vanished with Marilla's news, but writing a steady, clean hand did seem difficult. The wording needed to be just right, too. This was not to be a letter from the daughter heir of Andor, but from Elaine Trakand, Aes Sedai of the Green Aja. They had to see what she wanted them to see.
"Try to talk some bloody sense into her, Avienda," Brigida muttered. "In case you can't, I had best see if I can scrape together a suitable flaming escort."
"No escort, Brigida, except for you. And Aes Sedai and her warder. And Avienda, of course."
Elaine paused in writing to smile at her sister, who did not smile back.
"I know your courage, Elaine," Avienda said. "I admire your courage. But even Shamad Konda knew when to be cautious."
"She spoke of caution. Avienda would not know caution if it bit her on the nose." "And Aes Sedai and her warder?" Brigida exclaimed. "I told you, you can't go running off trying to have adventures anymore."
"No escort," Elaine said firmly, dipping her pen for another try. "This isn't an adventure. It is just the way it must be done."
Throwing up her hands, Brigida growled several oaths, but nothing Elaine had not heard before.
To her surprise, Melar made no objection to staying behind. A meeting with four rulers would hardly be as boring as meeting merchants, but he begged leave to be about his duties since she did not need him. That contented her. A captain of the Royal Guards would make the Borderlanders think of her as daughter heir sooner than she wanted. Not to mention that Melar might decide to leer at her. Captain Melar's unconcern was not shared by the rest of her bodyguard, though. One of the guardswomen apparently went running for Casela, because the tall Arafelan woman came striding into the sitting room while Elaine was still writing, demanding to accompany Elaine with the entire bodyguard. Brigida finally had to order her out to stop her protests. For once, Brigida appeared to recognize the fact that Elaine was not going to be budged, leaving with Casela to change her clothes. Well, she stalked off grumbling oaths, slamming the door behind her with a crash, but at least she did go. You might have thought she would be happy for a chance to take off that Captain General's coat, but the bond might as well have been an echo of her curses. Avienda did not curse, but she kept up her admonitions. Everything had to be done in such a whirlwind, though, that Elaine had an excuse to ignore them. Esunda was summoned and began laying out suitable garments while Elaine hastily ate her midday meal early. She had not sent for it. Avienda had. Apparently Monaella said missing meals was as bad as eating too much. Mistress Harfour, informed that she would have to handle the glassmakers and the other delegations as well, grimaced faintly even as she inclined her head in acceptance. Before leaving, she announced that she had acquired goats for the palace. Elaine needed to drink goat's milk. And lots of it. Kariana groaned at hearing that she was to teach the Windfinders that night, but at least the woman made no comment on her diet. In truth, she hoped to be back in the palace by nightfall, but she also expected to be as tired as if she had already taught that lesson. Van Deen did not offer advice, either. Not of that sort. Elaine had studied the nations of the Blight Border along with every other land as part of her education— and had discussed her intentions with the white-haired Green, who knew the borderlands well,
yet she would have dearly loved to take Van Deen along. Someone who had actually lived in the borderlands might see nuances that escaped her, but she did not dare do more than ask a few last hurried questions while Asanda was dressing her, just to reassure herself on things Van Deen had already told her. Not that she needed reassurance, she realized. She felt as focused as Birgitta drawing a bow. Finally, Rihanna had to be brought from where she was yet again trying to convince a former Suldam that she, too, could channel. Rihanna had been making that weave in the stable-yard every day since she first wove it to send Marilla off. She could open it on the same spot in Brame Wood with no difficulty. There were no maps of that area in the palace that were good enough for Marilla to mark the camp's positions very well, and if Elaine or Avienda wove the gateway, it might open 10 miles or more farther from the camps than the small clearing Rihanna knew. The snow had stopped falling in Brame Wood before the grey returned, yet even so, 10 miles in fresh snow could mean another 2 hours at best. Elaine wanted this done quickly. Speed. Everyone had to move with speed. The sea folk must have been aware of the bustle that enveloped the palace, guardswomen running through the hallways carrying messages and fetching this person or that, but Elaine made sure they were told nothing. Suppose Zaida decided to come along. She was capable of having one of the windfinders make her own gateway if Elaine refused her, and the wave mistress was a complication to be avoided. The woman already behaved as though she had as much right in the palace as Elaine herself. Zaida trying to domineer could ruin everything as surely as Melar leering at her. Making haste seemed beyond Asanda's ability, yet everyone else flew, and by the time the sun stood straight overhead, Elaine found herself riding Fireheart slowly through the snows of Brame Wood, near enough 50 leagues north of Camelin as the wild goose flew, but only a step through the gateway into thick forest of tall pine and leatherleaf and oak mixed with grey-branched trees that had lost their leaves. Occasionally a broad meadow opened up, covered with snow like white carpets, unblemished save for the hoofprints of Marilla's running horse. Marilla had been sent ahead with the letter, and Elaine, Avienda, and Birgitta had followed after an hour to give her time to reach the borderlanders ahead of them. The road from Camelin to New Brame lay some miles to the west. Here they could have been 1,000 leagues from human habitation. For Elaine, dressing had been as serious as choosing armor. Her cloak was lined with marten for added warmth, but the material was dark green wool, soft yet thick, and her riding dress was green silk and unadorned. Even her snug riding gloves were plain dark green leather. Unless the swords had been drawn, that was the armor in which an Aes Sedai faced rulers. Her only visible jewelry was a small amber brooch in the shape of a turtle, and if anyone thought that odd, let them. An army of borderlanders was beyond any trap one of her rivals could lay, or even Elida, but those 10 sisters, 10 or more, might be Elida's. She was not about to let herself be bundled off back to the White Tower. "We can turn back from this without incurring toll, Elaine." Avienda, scowling, still wore her Aiel garments, with her single silver necklace and heavy ivory bracelet. Her stocky bay was a hand shorter than Fireheart, or Brigida's lean gray arrow, and much gentler to handle, though she rode more easily than once she had. Dark-stockinged legs, bared above the knee by straddling a saddle, she actually looked warm, except for the shawl wrapped around her head. Unlike Birgitta, she had not ceased her attempts to dissuade Elaine. "Surprise is all very well, but they will respect you more if they must meet you halfway." "I can hardly abandon Marilla," Elaine said more patiently than she felt. Perhaps she was not weary any longer, but neither did she feel particularly fresh, not at all ready to put up with badgering. But she did not want to snap at Avienda. "She might feel something of a fool standing there with a letter announcing that I'm coming and I don't come. Worse, I would feel a fool."
"Better to feel a fool than be one," Birgitta muttered, half under her breath.
Her dark cloak spread behind her saddle, and her intricate braid hung from the opening of her hood almost to her waist. Pulling that hood up just enough to frame her face was the one concession she had made to the cold and the gusting wind that sometimes lifted fresh-fallen snow like feathers. She did not want her vision obscured. The cover on her bow's saddle case, meant to keep the bowstring dry, hung down so she could reach the bow quickly. The suggestion that she wear a sword had been quashed with as much indignation as if Elaine had asked Avienda to wear one. Brigitte knew the bow, but she claimed she might stab herself trying to draw a sword. Still, her short green coat would have blended into Woodlands at another time of the year, and, for a wonder, her wide-legged trousers were the same color. She was a warder now, not the Captain General of the Queen's Guard. Yet she was not so pleased by the title as might have been expected. The bond carried as much frustration as alertness. Elaine sighed, her breath misting.
"You two know what I hope to achieve here. You've known since I decided. Why are you suddenly treating me as if I'm made of blown glass?"
The pair exchanged looks past her, each waiting for the other to speak first, then silently turned to stare straight ahead, and suddenly she knew.
"When my child is born," she said dryly, "you can both apply to be her wet nurse."
If her child was her. If Min had said it was lost in Avienda and Brigitte's wine-hazed memories of that night. It might be better to have a son first, so he could begin his training before his sister came. Yet a daughter secured the succession, while a lone son would be pushed aside, and as much as she wanted more than one, nothing said she would have another child. The light send her more of Rand's children, but she had to be practical.
"I myself do not need a wet nurse."
Avienda's sun-darkened cheeks turned darker with embarrassment. Brigitte's expression did not change, yet the same emotion oozed along the warder bond. They rode slowly, following Marilla's tracks for close on 2 hours, and Elaine was thinking that the nearest camp must be very close, when Brigitte suddenly pointed ahead and said, "Shinarans," then eased her bow in its case. Alertness swallowed frustration and everything else in the bond. Avienda touched the hilt of her belt knife as if making sure it was there. Waiting beneath the trees, off to one side from Marilla's traces, men and horses alike were so still that Elaine almost took them for natural outcrops of some sort until she made out the strange swooping crests on their helmets. Their mounts were not armored, as Shinaran heavies animals often were, but the men themselves wore plate and mail, with long-hilted swords on their backs, and swords and maces hung at their belts and from their saddles. Their dark eyes never blinked. One of the horses swished its tail, and the movement seemed startling. A sharp-faced man with a harsh voice spoke as Elaine and the other two women drew rein in front of him. The crest atop his helmet looked like narrow wings.
"King Esau sends his assurance of your safety, Elaine," said I, "and I add my own. I am Caen Yokata, Lord of Fal Eisen, and may peace abandon me and the blight consume my soul if harm befalls you or anyone with you in our camp."
That was not so comforting as Elaine might have wished. All these guarantees of her safety only made it clear that there had been some question of it, and might still be.
"Does an Aes Sedai need assurances from Shinarans?" she said. She started to run through a novice exercise for calmness and realized she did not need it. Very strange. "You may lead, Lord Caen."
He merely nodded and turned his horse. Some of the Shinarans glanced at Avienda without expression, recognizing an Aiel, but for the most part they simply fell in behind. Only the hooves crunching the harder snow beneath the fresh fall broke the silence of their short ride. She had been right. The Shinaran camp was very close. She began to see sentries, mounted and armored, just minutes later, and soon after that they rode into the Shinaran camp. Sprawled among the trees, the encampment seemed larger than she had imagined. Whether she looked left, right, or ahead, tents and cook fires, lines of tethered horses, and rows of wagons stretched out of her sight. As she and her escort passed, soldiers looked up in curiosity, hard-faced men with their heads shaved except for a tuft on top that was sometimes long enough to reach the shoulders. Few wore any part of their armor, but armor and weapons always lay close to hand. The smell was not so bad as Marilla had described, though she could make out the faint odor of latrines and horse dung beneath the aroma of whatever was boiling in all these cookpots. No one appeared hungry, though many were lean. Not the leanness of starvation, though, just that of men who had never carried much fat on them. She did notice that there were no spits over any fire she could see. Meat would be harder to come by than grain, though grain itself was in short enough supply this late in winter. Barley soup did not strengthen a man the way meat did. They needed to move soon. Nowhere could support four armies this size for long. She just had to make sure they moved in the right direction.
Not everyone she saw was a soldier with a shaven head, of course, though the men among them looked almost as hard. There were fletchers making arrows, wheelwrights working on wagons, farriers shoeing horses, laundresses stirring boiling kettles, women working with needles who might have been seamstresses or wives. Great numbers of people always followed an army, sometimes as many as the soldiers themselves. She did not see anyone who could have been Aes Sedai, though. Sisters were unlikely to push up their sleeves and work wooden paddles in the laundry kettles, or don patched woolens and sit darning breeches. Why did they want to remain hidden? She resisted the desire to embrace the source, to draw Saidar through the turtle Angreal pinned to her breast. One battle at a time, and first she must fight for Andor. Before a much larger tent than any of the others she could see, pale canvas with a single long peak, Kayen dismounted and handed her down. He hesitated over whether to do the same for Birgitta and Avienda, but Birgitta solved his dilemma by stepping down smoothly and handing her reins to a waiting soldier, Avienda by half falling out of the saddle. She had improved her riding, but mounting and dismounting still gave her difficulty. Glaring around her to see whether anyone was laughing, she smoothed down her bulky skirts, then unwrapped the shawl from around her head and settled it on her shoulders. Birgitta watched her horse being taken away as though she wished she had taken her bow and quiver from the saddle. Kayen pulled open one of the entry flaps and bowed. Drawing a last deep, calming breath, Elaine led the other two women in. She could not allow them to see her as a supplicant. She was not here to beg or to defend. Sometimes, Gareth Bryn had told her when she was a child, you find yourself outnumbered, with no path to slip away. Always do what your enemy least expects, Elaine. In that case, you must attack. From the start, she must attack. Inside, Marilla glided to her across the layered carpets laid down for a floor. The diminutive Grey's smile was not precisely relieved, but clearly she was glad to see Elaine. Aside from her, there were only five others present, two women and three men, and one of the latter was a servant, an old cavalryman by his bowed legs and scarred face, who came to take cloaks and gloves, and blink at Avienda, before retreating to a plain wooden table that held a silver tray with a tall-necked pitcher and an array of cups. The other four ruled the nations of the borderlands. A scattering of backless camp chairs and four large braziers holding glowing coals completed the tent's furnishings. This was not the sort of reception the daughter heir of Andor might have expected, with courtiers and many servants and idle conversation to be made before serious discussions could begin, and men and women at those rulers' shoulders to advise them. What she found was what she had hoped for. Healing had rid Marilla's eyes of their dark circles before she left the palace, and she made Elaine's introduction with simple dignity. "This is Elaine Trakand of the Green Aja, as I told you." That, and nothing more. Elaine knew enough from Van Deen to pick out one from another of the four rulers who faced her.
"I give you welcome, Elaine Sedai," Isar of Shinar said. "Peace and the light favor you."
He was a short man, no taller than herself, slim in a bronze-colored coat, his face unwrinkled despite a long white topknot that hung over the side of his head. Looking at his sad eyes, she reminded herself that he was accounted a wise ruler and a skilled diplomat as well as a fine soldier. In appearance, he was none of those things.
"May I offer you wine? The spices are not fresh, but they have gained extra sharpness with age."
"When Marilla told us you would come all the way from Camelin today, I confess I would have doubted her were she not Aes Sedai." Atheniella of Candor, perhaps half a hand taller than Marilla, was plump, her black hair lightly dusted with grey, but there was nothing motherly about her despite her smile. Regal dignity clothed her as much as did her fine blue wool. Her eyes were blue, too, clear and level.
"We are pleased that you did come,"
Pytar of Arafel said in a surprisingly deep, rich voice that made Elaine feel warmed somehow.
"We have much to discuss with you."
Van Deen had said he was the most beautiful man in the Borderlands,
and perhaps he had been long ago, but age had laid deep lines in his face, and only a fringe of short gray hair remained on his head. He was tall and broad-shouldered, though, in plain green, and he did look strong, and not a fool. Where the others carried their years with grace, Tenobia of Saldea flaunted youth, if not beauty, with her eagle's beak of a nose and wide mouth. Her tilted, almost purple eyes, level with Elaine's, were her best feature, perhaps her only one. Where the others dressed simply, even if they did rule nations, her pale blue dress was worked with pearls and sapphires, and she wore more sapphires in her hair. Suitable for the court, but hardly for a camp. And where they were courteous, "Under the light, Marilla Sedai," Tenobia said in a high voice, frowning. "I know you speak truth, but she looks more a child than an Aes Sedai. You did not mention she would be bringing a black-eyed Aiel." Isar's face never changed, but Pytar's mouth tightened, and Atheniella went so far as to cut her eyes briefly toward Tenobia in a glance that would have suited another. A very irritated and displeased mother. "Black," Avienda muttered in confusion. "My eyes are not black. I never saw black eyes except on a peddler until I crossed the dragon wall."
"You know I can speak only the truth, Tenobia, and I assure you," Marilla began.
Elaine silenced her with a touch on the arm.
"It is enough that you know I am Aes Sedai, Tenobia. This is my sister, Avienda, of the Nine Valleys, Sept of the Tardad Aiel."
Avienda smiled at them, or at least bared her teeth.
"This is my warder, Lady Birgitta Trahelion."
Birgitta made a short bow, her golden braid swaying. One announcement caused as many startled looks as the other. An Aiel woman was her sister? Her warder was a woman? But Tenobia and the others ruled lands on the edge of the Blight, where nightmares truly might walk abroad in daylight, and anyone who let themselves be startled too greatly was as good as dead. Elaine gave them no chance to recover fully, though. "Attack before they know what you are doing," Gareth Bryn had said, "and keep attacking until you rout them or break through."
"Shall we consider the niceties completed?" she said, taking a cup that gave off the aroma of spiced wine from the tray proffered by the old soldier.
A surge of caution flowed along the warder bond, and she saw Avienda glance sideways at the cup, but she did not mean to drink. She was just glad neither actually spoke. "Only a fool would think you have come all this way to invade Andor," she said, walking to the chairs and sitting. Rulers or not, they had no choice but to follow or stare at her back. At Brigitte's back, since she stood behind her. As usual, Avienda folded herself to the floor and arranged her skirts in a neat fan. They followed. "The Dragon Reborn brings you," Elaine went on. "You requested this audience with me because I was at Falma. The question is, why is that important to you? Do you think I can tell you more of what happened there than you already know? The Horn of Valyr was sounded, dead heroes out of legend rode against Shonchan invaders, and the Dragon Reborn fought the Shadow in the sky for all to see. If you know that much, you know as much as I."
"Audience?" Tenobia said incredulously, pausing half-seated. The camp chair creaked as she let herself drop the rest of the way. "No one requested an audience, even if you already held the throne of Andor."
"Let us stay to the point, Tenobia," Pytar broke in mildly. Rather than sitting, he stood, occasionally sipping at his wine. Elaine was glad she could see the wrinkles on his face. That voice could confuse a woman's thoughts otherwise. Atheniella spared Tenobia another quick glance while seating herself, and murmured something under her breath. Elaine thought she heard the word marriage with a rueful sound, but that made no sense. In any case, she turned her attention to Elaine as soon as she was settled in her chair. "I might like your ferocity another time, Elaine Sedai, but there's little to enjoy falling into an ambush that one of your own allies has helped lay." Tenobia scowled, though Atheniella did not even dart those sharp eyes in her direction. "What happened at Falma," the Queen of Candor told Elaine, "is not so important as what came of it. No, Pytar, we must tell her what we must tell her. She already knows too much for anything else. We know that you were a companion to the Dragon Reborn at Falma, Elaine, a friend, perhaps. You are right. We have not come to invade.
We have come to find the dragon reborn, and we have marched all this way only to find that no one knows where he is to be found. Do you know where he is?"
Elaine hid her relief at the blunt question. It would never have been asked if they thought she was more than a companion or friend. She could be just as blunt. Attack and keep attacking.
"Why do you want to find him? Emissaries or messengers could take any word you wanted to send him."
Which was as good as asking why they brought vast armies. Isar had taken no wine, and he stood with his fists on his hips.
"The war against the Shadow is fought along the Blight," he said grimly. "The last battle will be fought in the Blight, if not at Shael Ghul itself. And he ignores the borderlands and concerns himself with lands that have not seen a Murdral since the Trolloc Wars."
"The Karakarn decides where to dance the spears, Wetlander," Avienda sneered. "If you follow him, then you fight where he says."
No one looked at her. They were all looking at Elaine. No one took the opening Avienda had offered. Elaine made herself breathe evenly and meet their gazes without blinking. A borderland army was too great a trap for Elaida to lay in order to catch Elaine Trakand, but Randall Thor, the dragon reborn, might be another matter. Mirrolilla shifted on her chair, but she had her instructions. No matter how many treaties the Grey Sister had negotiated, once Elaine began, she was to keep silent. Confidence flowed along the bond with Brigitte. Rand was a stone, unreadable and distant.
"You know of the White Tower's proclamation regarding him?" she asked quietly. "They must by now."
"The Tower calls anathema on anyone who approaches the Dragon Reborn save through the offices of the Tower,"
Pytar said just as quietly. Taking a seat at last, he regarded her with serious eyes.
"You are Aes Sedai. Surely that counts as the same thing."
"The Tower meddles everywhere," Tenobia muttered. "No, Etheniella, I will say this. The whole world knows the Tower is divided. Do you follow Elaida or the rebels, Elaine?"
"The world seldom knows what it thinks it knows," Mirrolilla said, in a voice that seemed to lower the temperature in the tent. The tiny woman who ran when Elaine ordered her and squeaked when windfinders looked at her sat up straight and faced Tenobia as an Aes Sedai, her smooth face as frosty as her tone. "The affairs of the Tower are for initiates to know, Tenobia. If you want to learn, ask to have your name written in the novice book, and in 20 years you might learn a little." Her illumined majesty, Tenobia Sibashir Kazadi, Shield of the North and Sword of the Blight Border, High Seat of House Kazadi, Lady of Shahani, Aznella, Kunwar, and Ganai, glared at Mirrolilla with all the fury of a blizzard, and said nothing. Elaine's respect for her increased slightly. Mirrolilla's disobedience did not displease her. It saved her from trying to prevaricate while seeming to speak only the truth. Egwene said they must try to live as if they had already sworn the three oaths, and here and now Elaine felt the weight of it. Here she was not the daughter heir of Andor struggling to claim her mother's throne, or not only that. She was an Aes Sedai of the Green Aja, with more reason for taking care with her words than simply hiding what she wanted to remain hidden. "I cannot tell you exactly where he is." Truth, because she could only have given them a vague direction, roughly toward Tyr, and no telling how far. Truth, because she did not trust them sufficiently for even that. She just had to be careful what she said and how. "I do know that apparently he intends to remain where he is a while." He had not moved for days, the first time since leaving her that he had remained in any one place longer than half a day. "I will tell you what I can, but only if you agree that you will march south within the week. You will run out of barley as well as meat if you remain here much longer anyway. I promise you, you will be marching toward the Dragon Reborn."
"To begin with, they would be at any rate."
Pytar shook his bald head.
"You want us to enter Andor?" "Elaine Sedai, or should I call you Lady Elaine now? I wish you the Light's blessing in your quest for Andor's crown, but not enough to offer my men to fight for it."
"Elaine Sedai and Lady Elaine are one and the same," she told them. "I do not ask you to fight for me. In truth, I hope with all my heart that you cross Andor without so much as a skirmish."
Raising her silver wine cup, she wet her lips without drinking. A flash of caution surged through the warder bond, and in spite of herself, Elaine laughed. Avienda was watching her from the corner of her eye and frowning. Even now they were going to look after the mother-to-be.
"I'm glad someone finds this amusing," Atheniella said wryly. "Try to think like a Southlander, Pytar. They play the game of houses here, and I think she is being very clever at it. She should be, I suppose. I've always heard that Aes Sedai created Desdemar."
"Think tactics, Pytar."
Isar was studying Elaine, wearing a small smile.
"We move toward Camelin as invaders, so any Andoran will see it. Winter may be mild here, but we'll still need weeks to ride that far. By the time we do, she will have rallied enough of the Andoran houses against us and to her that she will have the Lion Throne near enough. At the least, enough strength will have been pledged to her that no one else will be able to stand long against her."
Tenobia shifted on her chair, frowning and adjusting her skirts, but there was a respect in her eyes when she looked at Elaine that had not been there before.
"And when we reach Camelin, Elaine Sedai," Atheniella said, "you will negotiate us into leaving Andor without a battle being fought."
That came out as not quite a question, but almost.
"Very clever indeed."
"If all works as she plans," Isar said, his smile fading. He put out a hand without looking, and the old soldier placed a wine cup in it. "Battles seldom do. Even this bloodless sort, I think."
"I very much want it all to be bloodless," Elaine said. Light it had to be, or instead of saving her country from civil war, she had plunged it into worse. "I will work hard to see that it is. I expect you to do the same."
"Do you also happen to know where my uncle Davram is, Elaine Sedai?"
Tenobia said suddenly.
"Davram Bashir? I would like to speak with him as much as with the Dragon Reborn."
"Lord Davram is not far from Camelin, Tenobia. I cannot promise he will still be there when you arrive, though. That is, if you agree."
Elaine made herself breathe to hide her anxiety. She was beyond where she could turn back now. They would move south now, she was certain, but without their agreement, there would be bloodshed. For a long moment there was silence in the tent, except for a coal cracking in one of the braziers. Atheniella exchanged glances with the two men.
"So long as I get to see my uncle," Tenobia said heatedly, "I am agreed."
"On my honor, I am agreed," Isar said decisively.
And almost atop him, if in a milder tone, Pytar said,
"Under the light, I am agreed."
"Then so are we all," Atheniella breathed.
"And now your part, Elaine Sedai. Where do we find the Dragon Reborn?" A thrill shot through Elaine, and she could not say whether it was exhilaration or fear. She had done what she had come for, risked the dangers for herself and for Andor, and only time would tell whether she had made the right decision. She answered without hesitation.
"As I told you, I cannot say exactly where. A search in Murundi will be profitable, though."
Truth, though the profit would be hers, not theirs, if any came.
Egwene had moved from Murundi today, taking away the army that had held Arathella Renshar and the other nobles in the south. Perhaps the Borderlanders moving south would force Arathella and Luon and Pelivar to decide, as Dailin believed they would, to support her. The light send it so. Except for Tenobia, the Borderlanders did not seem at all exultant over learning where to find Rand. Atheniella let out a long breath, almost a sigh, and Isar simply nodded and pursed his lips in thought. Pytar drank down half his wine, the first real drink he had taken. It very much seemed that however much they wanted to find the Dragon Reborn, they were not looking forward to meeting him. Tenobia, on the other hand, called for the old soldier to bring her wine, and went on about how much she wanted to see her uncle. Elaine would not have thought the woman had so much family feeling. Night came early that time of year, and only a few hours of daylight remained, as Isar pointed out, offering beds for the night. Atheniella suggested that her own tent would be more comfortable, yet they gave no sign of disappointment when Elaine said she must leave immediately.
"Remarkable that you can cover such distance so quickly," Atheniella murmured. "I have heard Aes Sedai speak of a thing called traveling. A lost talent?"
"Have you encountered many sisters on your journey?" Elaine asked.
Some, Atheniella replied. There are Aes Sedai everywhere, it seems.
Even Tenobia was suddenly expressionless.
Allowing Brigitta to lay the marten-lined cloak on her shoulders, Elaine nodded. So there are. Would you have our horses brought?
None of them spoke again until they were out of the camp, riding through the trees. The horse smell and latrine stink had seemed mild in the camp, but their absence here made the air seem very fresh, and the snow whiter somehow.
You were very quiet, Brigitta Trehelian, Avienda said, thumping her bay's ribs with her heels. She always believed the animal would stop without reminders to keep going.
A warder doesn't speak for her Aes Sedai. She bloody listens and watches her back, Brigitta replied dryly. It was unlikely the forest contained anyone who might threaten them, this near the Shinaran camp, but her bow remained uncovered, and her eyes scanned the trees.
A much hastier form of negotiation than I am used to, Elaine, Marilla said. Normally these matters require days or weeks of talking, if not months, before anything is agreed. You were lucky they are not Damani.
Or Kyrianen, she admitted judiciously.
Borderlanders are refreshingly open and straightforward. Easy to deal with.
Open and straightforward? Elaine shook her head slightly. They wanted to find Rand, but concealed why. They concealed the presence of sisters, too. At least they would be moving away from him once she had them on their way to Murundi. That would have to do for now, but she had to warn him once she could figure out how to do so without endangering him.
Take care of him, Min, she thought. Take care of him for us.
A few miles from the camp, she reined in to study the forest as assiduously as Brigitta, especially behind them. The sun sat low on the treetops. A trotting white fox appeared for an instant and was gone. Something flickered on a bare gray branch, a bird, perhaps, or a squirrel. A dark hawk suddenly plummeted out of the sky, and a thin squeal broke the air and ended suddenly. They were not being followed. It was not the Shinarans she worried about, but those hidden sisters. The weariness that had vanished earlier with Marilla's news had returned with interest now that her meeting with the Borderlanders was done. She wanted nothing so much as to climb into her bed as soon as possible, but she did not want it enough to give the weave for traveling to sisters she did not know. She could have woven a gateway to the palace stable-yard, but only at the risk of killing someone who happened to be crossing where it opened, so instead she wove one for another place she knew just as well. She was so tired that it required effort to weave, so tired that she did not think of the Angreal pinned to her dress, until the silvery slash had appeared in the air and opened onto a field covered with brown grass beaten flat by earlier snowfalls, a field just south of Camelin where Gareth Bryn had often taken her to watch the Queen's guards ride to command, breaking from columns to form a line four abreast at a shouted order.
"Are you just going to look at it?" Brigitta demanded.
Elaine blinked. Avienda and Marilla were studying her with concern. Brigitta's face gave nothing away, but the bond carried worry, too.
"I was just thinking," Elaine said, and healed Fireheart through the gateway. Bed would be wonderful.
From the old practice field to the tall arched gates set in the pale 50-foot-high city walls was a short ride. The long market buildings lining the approach to the gates were empty at this hour, but sharp-eyed guardsmen still kept a watch. They watched her and the others ride in, apparently without recognizing her. Mercenaries, very likely. They would not know her unless they saw her on the Lion Throne. With the help of the light and luck, they would see her there. Twilight was fast approaching, the sky turning a deep gray and the shadows slanting long across the streets. Very few people were still out and about, a scattering of folk hurrying to finish their day's work before going home to dinner and a warm fire. A pair of bearers carrying a merchant's dark lacquered sedan chair went trotting past along a street ahead, and a few moments later one of the big pump wagons rumbled in the other direction behind eight running horses, its iron-shod wheels loud on the paving stones. Another fire somewhere. They happened most often at night. A patrol of four guardsmen walked their horses toward her and on, without looking at her twice. They did not recognize her any more than the men at the gates. Swaying in her saddle, she rode, wishing for her bed.
It was a shock to realize that she was being lifted down from her saddle. She opened eyes she did not remember closing and found herself being carried into the palace in Brigitte's arms.
"Put me down," she said tiredly. "I can still walk."
"You can hardly stand up," Brigitte growled. "Be still."
"You cannot talk with her," Avienda said loudly.
"She really does need sleep, Master Nari," Marilla said in firm tones. "Tomorrow will have to do."
"Forgive me, but tomorrow will not do," Nari replied, for a wonder sounding very firm himself. "It is urgent I speak with her now."
Elaine's head wanted to wobble as she lifted it. Hallwyn Nari was clutching that leather folder to his skinny chest as always, but the dry man who talked of crowned heads with the same dusty tone he used for speaking of the roof repairs was almost dancing on his toes in an effort to get by Avienda and Marilla, who each had him by an arm, holding him back.
"Put me down, Brigitte," she said again, and for the second wonder in as many moments, Brigitte obeyed.
She kept a supporting arm around Elaine, though, for which Elaine was grateful. She was not sure her legs would have supported her for very long.
"What is it, Master Nari?"
"Let the man go, Avienda." "Marilla?" The first clerk darted forward as soon as they let go of him.
"Word began arriving soon after you left, my lady," he said, not sounding dusty at all.
Worry pinched his brows.
"There are 4 armies. Small, I should say now, I suppose. Light. I recall when 5,000 men was an army."
He rubbed a hand over his bald head, leaving the white tufts rising behind his ears in ruffled disarray.
"There are 4 small armies approaching Camelin from the east," he went on in a more usual tone for him.
"Almost.
They will be here inside the week, I fear. 20,000 men. Perhaps 30. I cannot be sure."
He half extended the folder to her as if offering to show her the papers inside. He was agitated.
"Who?" she said.
"Elenia had estates and forces in the east, but so did Neon. But neither could raise 20,000 men, and the snow and mud should have held them until spring. Should and would build no bridges," she seemed to hear Lini's thin voice say.
"I do not know, my lady," Nari replied. "Not yet."
It did not matter, Elaine supposed. Whoever it was, they were coming. And now.
"At first light, Master Nari, I want you to begin buying all the foodstuffs you can find outside the walls and get it brought in. Brigitte, have the bannerman announcing the signing bounty add that mercenaries have 4 days to sign with the guards or they must leave the city. And have announcements made to the people, too, Master Nari. Whoever wants to leave before the siege begins should go now. It will cut down the number of mouths we have to feed, and it might lead a few more men to enlist in the guards."
Pushing away from Brigitte's support, she strode along the hallway, heading for her apartments. The others were forced to follow.
"Marilla, let the kinswomen know, and the Athan Mier. They may want to leave before it begins, too. Maps, Brigitte. Have the good maps brought to my apartments. And another thing, Master Nari."
There was no time for sleep, no time for weariness. She had a city to defend.